Please lower your head and watch your step while boarding.
Welcome to the Attractions Podcast. You are all clear for dispatch. Have fun.
Hello and welcome to episode 98 of the Attractions Podcast, sponsored by Destinations with Character Travel. I'm Brittany.
And I'm Seth.
And we're here to talk to you about the latest and greatest in theme park news and more, as well as what's going on in our own lives. Seth, how has your past week been?
It's been great. Thank you so much for asking. Highlight of my week was I got to go out and do a little media preview of the Carnival Mardi Gras, which is the brand new ship that just launched. In fact, our publisher, Matt, is on the inaugural cruise right now. Hopefully he's not spending his Wi-Fi package streaming this. If you're, hi, Matt.
So
I got to tour the ship. I got to sample a lot of the restaurants, which were great. And most importantly, Matt and I got to be a couple of the very first riders on Bolt, which is the world's first roller coaster on a cruise ship. So that was really great to be able to do just for the novelty of it. To be honest, if you are a coaster fanatic, you're not going to be too impressed with it as a roller coaster. It's sort of like when they built a tiny, tiny little roller coaster at the top of the Stratosphere Tower in Las Vegas, and it was basically a little kiddie coaster, but because it was on top of Stratosphere, they could charge a whole lot of money for it. It's just the same sort of thing. I don't necessarily think it's worth the $15 for one ride that they're charging.
You have to pay.
Yeah, it's not included with your cruise. But it was very nice of them to invite us out and get to check that out. And what about you? Did you have an exciting week?
I did. Most exciting parts, I think. Last night I got to catch the Green Knight at my local Alamo Drafthouse, and it was beautiful. Mm. A beautiful, just like feast for the eyeballs movie. It is not your typical like medieval movie, so don't go into it expecting that. A lot of the negative reactions I've seen online have been people who thought it was going to be one thing and then got there and then realized it wasn't that thing at all. But it was so good. And then today, a few hours ago, I got a new tattoo, and I will not be showing you because it looks really gross right now. But yeah,
you are a lot braver than I am. I've never gotten a tattoo. I don't like pain.
For me personally, and I know a lot of people who have tattoos might say otherwise, the line work for me is more tolerable than the shading. The shading is just like scratching a sunburn over and over. But the line work, like, I can just lay there and deal with it. But yeah, I was there from 12:30, and then we took a break after I finished my line work, and that was like an hour and a half, and then I finished up and got home around 5:20 this afternoon. So it was
a long day in the chair. That's,
yeah,
yikes. Well, yeah. I hope you heal up quickly.
Yeah, I hope so too, just because I can't really like go outside with it, can't go swimming, all that jazz. But worth it. Art is cool, and I get to keep it forever. So
yay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right, well, without any further ado, I feel like that's the fastest we've ever gotten in
that's
through
great.
What we're doing.
Let's keep moving.
Let's get into the news. First up this week, Disney World is hosting an online job fair to recruit more Magic Makers.
Yeah, Universal was doing an employment drive just a week or two ago, and now Disney World is following suit, especially if you are in culinary, food and beverage, or housekeeping. You can not only get paid $14 to $19 an hour, but you can get a $1,000 signing bonus. So they are really searching for people.
Yes, it looks like the online hiring event just ended yesterday, the day that we're recording this, July 31st. But I would imagine that if you applied online through Disney Jobs or went to casting, they
just head on down to the casting building. They will welcome you right now.
Yeah, I don't think they would turn you away. Right now, their starting wages range from $14 to $19 per hour. And you get all sorts of benefits like free entry into the park, complimentary tickets, wellness resources, discounts, all that jazz, plus access to the Disney Aspire program if you want to further your secondary education, which is cool.
Yep. A lot of great perks. Just if you do get a job there, try not to spend your whole paycheck in the parks.
Yes. I learned that lesson the hard way when I was a CP. Never again. Next up, Inside the Walt Disney Archives recently debuted at Graceland, and this time the exhibit features some cool Elvis tie-ins.
Yeah, go on to our YouTube channel. There's a really cool video that we've posted from the opening of this. Honestly, I wouldn't have at first thought that the Elvis and Graceland and Disney would be like a natural fit. But this exhibit is really well done. It does have some nods to the King of Rock and Roll, most specifically some Lilo and Stitch items that tie into those characters' love of Elvis.
Let me tell you, I went to Graceland in 2019 on the way to visit my family for the holidays, and I was so upset that they don't let you take pictures in front of the gates anymore. They have like a fake photo op.
A fake gate.
Yeah. And I was like, this is in Lilo and Stitch. I'm going to take the picture. And they just, like, before you go to tour the house, they put you in front of this photo op thing, and you can take a picture in front of a backdrop.
Just not the same.
Yeah. I think you still can take photos in front of the gates when they're closed at, like, 5 in the morning. But it's really cool if you are asking yourself, what does Disney have to do with Elvis? They have an exhibition hall where they host traveling museum exhibits and the like. When I visited, it was a dinosaur exhibit, and I think dinosaurs have even less to do with Elvis, Presley than Disney.
They're like any museum that has their core exhibits, and then they have rotating exhibits on different themes. Yeah. And I think there's some overlap between, especially, that kind of mid-50s era that where both Disneyland was born and also, rock and roll. I think there's overlaps in the fandom there.
Yeah.
Though I don't think Walt himself was a big fan of Elvis. Not as far as I know.
They also had a bunch of other non-Elvis-related props, like Mr. Toad's Wild Ride vehicle, costumes from Mary Poppins Returns, the alien from Great Movie Ride.
I was wondering where he went.
Captain Rex from the original Star Tours at Disneyland, and then a Mayan priest from El Rio del Tiempo at Epcot, which I have never seen this before, this photograph.
Oh, yeah, this was the guy. Okay, so when you're on Rio, the Three Caballeros ride, El Gran Fiesta, or what, Gran Fiesta Tour, whatever they call it now, you see a screen towards the beginning of the ride at the end of a long tunnel. Where they're looking for Donald. Instead of a screen, that was originally a scrim, and behind the scrim was this, they called it an animatronic. Honestly, it barely moved. but it was creepy. And I remember as a kid being kind of fascinated by it because you could only sort of half see it when it lit up behind the scrim. It's a little disturbing.
And then they also have for you, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids fans, the restored shrinking machine that was featured in Prop Culture when they put it back together and fixed it up in one of the episodes. And then they also had things like a tie that Walt Disney once wore, which is crazy.
Does it still have his sweat? Can we clone his DNA?
Are you gonna sniff it and check?
No. No.
A commissary menu from Walt Disney's studio restaurant on the studio lot. All sorts of figures like that flying Dumbo there. Just so many cool things. I wish that the Walt Disney Archives would tour to other places so that I wouldn't have to go to Graceland to see all of this.
Yeah.
But it is so, so cool that they are traveling around with all of these unique artifacts and letting the public have a chance to see stuff that they normally wouldn't.
Road trip? It's like halfway between us, right? We meet in the middle.
I got invited to go to this, and I really wanted to, but I couldn't. It should be there for a while. Let's see. It will be there through January 2nd, 2022. So we have some time.
Got till the end of the year.
Something. Yes. Self-guided tickets, if you're interested, are just $15.
It's really reasonable for an exhibit like that.
A great deal. And $8 for kids ages 5 to 10. If I remember correctly, you can buy them online or in person at the Graceland Exhibit Center, which is like the compound across the street from Graceland, the house itself. Definitely check that out if you can. I'm super jealous if you get to. aboard the Disney Wish, which sounds more and more like a ship I want to have a cruise on, they've announced some new adult-focused offerings designed with our vacation needs in mind. So sorry, kids. And when I was writing this up, I immediately thought of you and your affinity for the Rainforest Room.
I love the Rainforest Room and the Senses Spa, and they are taking the Rainforest Room to the next level here with, instead of just steam rooms and hot rooms, they've also got an ice room, so you can get like a trendy thermal therapy if you're into that. I'd rather be warm than cold, personally. But the room just looks gorgeous, and all of these new adult-only areas look just gorgeous. The one thing that I've always loved about the Disney cruises that I've been on is that they have specific areas that cater to the kids and keep the kids away from the adults. And there's a really good, you know, definition, demarcation where the adult areas are, and I did not have any problems going without seeing screaming kids when I wanted to when it was on Disney boats. I would definitely, if I went on this, assuming that they change the pricing, because right now the boats that are going out, the Rainforest Rooms are, you have to rent them out for your family exclusively. I think it's like $175 for an hour and three quarters. Which is a little much for me. I liked it when you could just get a pass and go in and out whenever you wanted. But, you know, hopefully that can return someday. But beyond the Rainforest Room, there are some great salon opportunities. If you've been an adult and you're jealous of the kids getting to go to the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique, now there's basically the adult version of that.
Yeah, this one is called the Untangled Salon, and yes, it is inspired by Tangled, with all sorts of colors like purples and golds and pinks, and it has some of her art along the walls. There's a chandelier that looks like the magic flower that makes her hair glow and grow. You can get a variety of treatments, including manicures, pedicures, teeth whitening, and skin treatments, which I thought was really fun.
Or if you're feeling piratey, there is a Hook's Barbary inspired by the Peter Pan villain. And it's got lots of wood grain and leather seats and even a hidden bar where you can have pre-prohibition bourbon and other premium spirits.
That one sounds really cool, and I'm sad that we didn't get concept art for it because I would love to see what that looks like. And then they also have the Keg and Compass, which is a pub stylized like a late 1800s Norwegian sailor's map room.
And hopefully the entire smell better than an actual 1800s Norwegian sailor.
I would hate to know what that smells like. The entire ceiling is covered in maps that kind of low-key point out a few Disney locations and connections to characters like Moana and Ursula and important locations related to the Disney company in general and the construction of the Disney Wish, which was in Germany, I think. I think that's where they built the ship.
I'll back you up on that, sure.
I think no so. Don't more, quote me
more
on
importantly,
it.
They have three custom craft beers that you're only going to be able to get there.
Which sounds super enticing, so long as they're not IPAs. Sorry for IPA fans out there.
I'm right there with you.
But this seems really cool, like a great nighttime date place. Mm-hmm. Though I couldn't help but notice that this concept art, at least, the layout is very similar to the Star Wars bar that will also be on the ship.
Uh-huh. Well, they should all be sort of in the same district. And it's also similar to the layout of the sports bar that's on the Fantasy, I believe. Mm. I mean, it's a bar, so there's only so many ways you can arrange it.
And then they also have announced Nightingales, which is a refined piano bar, mm-hmm. inspired by Cinderella's rendition of Sing Sweet Nightingale from the 1950 animated feature. And it will offer an extensive menu of fine wines, bubblies, and handcrafted cocktails.
And if you're feeling a little swampy, the Bayou, which is inspired by The Princess and the Frog, is also going to be available. And that's got magnolia blossoms, lily pads, and a canopy of twinkling fireflies overhead, which that sounds really pretty.
It sounds like Blue Bayou, and I love Blue Bayou.
Yep.
They've also got... Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say that they've got also their own creative cocktails, specialty coffees, and, of course, live entertainment and music.
You forgot the most important part.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
The beignets.
Beignets. Mmm.
How could you forget the beignets?
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I don't want to shortchange the beignets.
I wonder if they will be regular-shaped or Mickey-shaped.
Everything tastes better with a Mickey shape.
This is true. Six Flags Fiesta Texas announced a very big thing this past week called Dr. Diabolical's Cliffhanger, the world's steepest dive roller coaster, set to open next summer.
Yeah, this is a custom-designed dive coaster. It's from B&M, who here in Florida we know Shikra, which is over at Busch Gardens Tampa. And this looks like Shikra's much, much bigger brother. the drop does a 95-degree beyond vertical first drop, which is pretty intense. And you're going to kind of stare into the face of that for a few seconds as it lets you hang there at the top of the first hill before you go into that 150-foot dive. And unlike some other dive coasters that are pretty much a one-trick pony, it looks like this one's got some serious inversions and a major helix. So it should be a little bit more to it. 8 intense inversions, sorry. That's quite a lot for a dive coaster. So this looks like it's going to pack a pretty big punch.
John in the chat says, theming on Dr. Diabolical is problematic currently.
Steampunk is problematic. I'm not sure.
I haven't seen any of that discourse.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
But
I think everything is problematic.
I will definitely have to go look into that. As for the ride itself, it made me do like a gulp when I saw the whole layout of it. It's so intense looking, and I was... Is it bad to say I was surprised to see a custom-designed roller coaster going into Six Flags Park when they usually just copy and paste
their rides? It is. I mean, well, you know, the Six Flags chain has had a really important relationship with B&M going back all the way to the Batman the Ride, which was like kind of the first inverted coaster design that then got cloned all over the world. You know, they've had a good partnership in the past, but... In more recent years, it's been like SeaWorld that's been, you know, putting the money into those big custom design coasters. It's good to see Six Flags getting back in the game with something brand new.
Yeah, this one, John said it's related to the virus. So interesting.
I didn't pick up on that part.
I didn't either, but the storyline is that Dr. Diabolical is on a quest to create menacing creatures to frighten the world, and will do so by using the roller coaster to capture the essence of human adrenaline and fear. It sounds like Horror Nights House.
It sounds like Dr. Doom's Fearfall, pretty much.
So we'll have to wait and see. This is set to open next summer during the park's 30th anniversary celebration. Maybe I'll actually get to go to a Six Flags park. This one's in Texas, so...
Yay.
Yeah, I will be so excited up until I get to here, and then I will immediately regret all of my decisions that led me to that point.
Yep.
I know we've got some Peppa Pig fans in the chat. You've got a whole lineup of attractions and rides to look forward to when Peppa Pig theme park opens next year.
I am hoping I will be able to kidnap one of my little nieces and take them to this, because I would feel very awkward going to a Peppa Pig theme park without a child. But all of the rides are designed, I think, with basically no height limits. It looks like pretty much everything, you know, the whole family can ride together. So I could get my coaster credit on Daddy Pig's roller coaster, which looks like, you know, even smaller and cuter than like the Woody Woodpecker coaster at Universal. You know, they've got like a balloon ride. They've got a dinosaur ride. Just pretty much every super cute little kiddie ride that you can imagine, but designed so that, you know, adults and kids can kind of experience them together.
They also have...
is what Walt would have wanted.
Yeah. They also have a cool indoor cinema situation, which you can go in and watch episodes of Peppa Pig. And I also, if you do go, I need a like a boomerang of you jumping in muddy puddles.
Yep, there are so many creative splash pads and playgrounds and walkthrough experiences in this, along with the lineup of rides. Looks like it's going to be a really great addition for the littlest kids to the Legoland Resort.
Yeah, and I know that this is just concept art, but I love how wide open it is. It feels so expansive.
Well, it's got to have plenty of room to push strollers.
And for kids to just run amok. But it looks like a ton of fun. I will look strange if I try to do any of it. And I don't have any children to borrow, so you'll have to do it.
I just hope it has a little more shade than it looks like in the concept art. That's the one thing that seems to be missing. Big trees, and occasionally you see one of these shade canopy structures. But it gets hot out there, and I don't want little infants dropping in the heat because they were waiting for Peppa Pig.
Yes, I imagine that they would, because Legoland is currently working on putting a giant shade structure over at Miniland USA.
Yes, can't wait till that happens.
And this kind of, at the cinema concept art is what we are looking at. This kind of looks like a themed canopy.
Mm-hmm. Or it might be indoor or outdoor. Like,
that was what I was thinking. Yeah. It was either one or the other. Mm-hmm. So keeping our fingers crossed that preschoolers will not succumb to heat stroke and melt. And can't wait to see this open in 2022.
I think you have an offer of a child to borrow in the chat.
Excuse me, you do have children to borrow. Okay.
All right.
Then when I need to visit Peppa Pig theme park, I will borrow the children. And then immediately return them to you.
Hopefully undamaged.
Well, no promises. I'm kidding. And then starting this past Friday, July 30th, face masks are once again required indoors at all of Walt Disney World's theme parks and indoor areas.
Yeah, I was just leaving California. Feels like yesterday, but it was 2 weeks ago when they were reimposing indoor masking at Universal, and Disneyland and Disney World announced very shortly after that. So we're kind of right back where we were. Months ago, where you've got to, you don't have to wear a mask outdoors, but whether or not you are vaccinated, everyone is going to be back to wearing masks inside. That's from the minute you walk into the attraction queue until you exit the attraction, and also when you're on your any kind of transportation like a bus or a monorail.
And not long after this was announced for Walt Disney World, Disneyland followed suit as well. And previously, they had fully vaccinated guests didn't have to wear their masks at the park.
Yeah. Yeah, I was there for the last few days of being able to ride rides inside at Disneyland without the mask. But now we're right back where we were.
And then Universal Hollywood made the move before everyone else about a month ago, I think. And it hasn't that was because of the L.A. County mask mandate that went.
Yeah, it was went in L.A. County first, and then Orange County. I think Disney in California just went ahead and made the decision even without the county's decision. But here in Orange County, Florida, our mayor, you know, because of our governor, he can't necessarily enforce any kind of mandate, but he can encourage private businesses to have a mandate on their private property, which is what Disney has now done.
Yeah. I think SeaWorld Orlando is encouraging guests to follow the CDC guidelines, but I don't know if they've made it a straight-up rule. This hasn't been updated to reflect that.
We can talk about what Universal Orlando is doing, but yes. SeaWorld has not announced any changes yet that I'm aware of.
Yep. And then Universal Orlando is requiring team members to wear masks, but not guests while indoors, which...
I think it's a strategic decision based on their experiences with guests getting unruly over being told they had to wear a face mask. I think this just gives them an out where... you know, a team member can remind someone, can encourage someone, but when it comes down to it, they don't need to get in a fight. They don't need to get security involved. They can just back off and say, you do you. Whether that's responsible for all the other guests around them is an excellent question. But I think Universal's kind of going the path of least resistance. They know there was a lot of friction and frustration when team members were constantly having to enforce that rule. And honestly, they can barely staff things to get people to just do the job they're supposed to do right now. Asking them to do their job and be the mask police at the same time is hard.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone gets paid enough to be the mask police, if I'm being honest. I would hope that most guests are nice, but I am not naive to think that there are
Have you worked at a theme park?
Yes, I have.
They're not all nice. And the whole masking debate seems to be bringing out the worst in a lot of people. So, you know, I was the same way when I was on the Mardi Gras ship just a few days ago, that they were encouraging people to, if they were not vaccinated, to wear a mask indoors, but there was no hard rule. And I personally chose to keep my mask on whenever I was inside. On the one hand, you know, Disney makes it, you know, mandatory rule. We don't have to, you know, that it is what it is. But then the question is, a rule is only as good as you can enforce it. And I don't know. I'm just waiting for another round of news stories about guests and cast members getting into conflict over masks and it turning ugly. Yeah. You know, we had a whole wave of videos of people getting thrown out of the parks, and it kind of slowed down and people had gotten used to it. And now that we're reversing the rules, I'm afraid it's going to flare up again.
Like we said last week, it's really hard to get that genie back in the bottle once you've let it out. And folks have had a taste of, you know, breathing without the mask.
People have short attention spans and, you know, we don't like going backwards. We like progress, and even if it's on a carousel, we don't like going backwards.
King Kino in the chat makes a good point. Bring on the mask for HHN.
I'll take masks over plexiglass. Yes. I think the masks have proven that they do have a positive effect. I don't think that plexiglass was ever really shown to be any way medically effective. So I'm happy if everyone has to wear a mask, that's fine, as long as we don't have to have plexiglass.
Yeah, I would like to hope that they might let face masks be optional indoors or in outdoor situations, but if you go in the houses, you have to have one just for like that one thing, because you're in such
you're right up in people's faces. You're everyone's business.
And not all of those buildings that the houses are in have really high quality air conditioning and air filtration things, and it's just safer for everyone, safer for the performers who can't wear masks or you know.
Agreed.
Yeah. That's what I'm hoping for. Keeping my fingers crossed. And right before we get into news in the queue, or finish news in the queue, this is where, if you are listening to the audio version, I will throw in an interview that we had with Greg Hall from Universal Creative, who did some magical things on the Jurassic World Velocicoaster.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating interview. It's a great companion to the Q&A I did with Shelby Honia. I totally butchered the pronunciation of her last name, sorry. But that's in our current issue of the magazine. And so get a copy of the magazine and then listen to this podcast and compare some of the answers that the two of them gave to some of the same questions.
All right, enjoy. So, Velocicoaster, I have to admit, I haven't been on it yet. I live in Texas, so it's a bit more of a trek for me to get out there.
I've made up for you. I think I just hit ride 31 the other day. So
really? Oh my god.
That's so cool.
I'm addicted.
I feel like I'm going to be the exact same once I'm able to actually get on the thing.
It's funny because the first day of opening, the most asked question was how many times did we ride it, and it was almost like a challenge. Like people just want to know what number to beat the team that worked on it. So that was pretty cool. Some of the engineers they actually, like, one of them is almost at 200 rides. I'm in the 60s. So.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I think he was preparing. He knew that was going to happen, so he would just come the next day, and he was riding, you know, doing all the test rides all night during testing.
You're getting up there,
yeah,
Seth.
he's getting up there, though.
No, I mean, during that media preview day, we had like an hour and a half in there, and I made a mission. I wanted to see what just about every seat felt like, so I probably did it about a dozen or so, just back to back to back. And after that, I needed a little rest. That was not smart.
Yeah.
That's not smart at any.
Awesome.
So we had a list of questions. Actually, I got to interview Shelby a couple months back for our magazine, and she gave great answers. And we had some of the same questions. I was kind of curious to see what your responses were like to some of the questions that I asked her. But
it's like Rachel, family feud.
You want to lead? You want to lead it off?
Sure. What were some of the formative theme park memories for you that kind of led you on this trajectory of career?
Oh, okay. So, you know, I was raised in Florida, so, you know, growing up, Universal Island of Adventures, and, you know, actually grew up with that park, and, you know, it was always like a rite of passage. So, you know, even my first roller coaster was the Incredible Hulk coaster.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, it was really awesome just, like, kind of seeing the evolution of the park, and you know, like, what if? You know, that was always a what if growing up. Like, what if I had the opportunity to do this? So, you know, just seeing different things throughout the years, it was really kind of natural once I, you know, actually was here and understanding the importance of the different elements, because I, you know, I feel like I could relate a lot to the guests and I could speak for them.
For
sure. Do you want us to trade off?
Oh, whatever you want to do.
You're in charge. I'm just your
oh, you're just here.
Well, okay. Something I'm curious about. I, you know, years of interviewing interviewing people who are theme park designers, and most of them look a lot like me. And, you know, it was great when I got to talk to Shelby to ask about, you know, what was her career advice for other young women wanting to get into the theme park design career. So I'll ask for you, since, you know, you are one of the most prominent black men of your generation with a design career in theme parks, what advice do you have for people like yourself who want to see themselves in this industry?
Well, you know, what's interesting is, as far as, like, even talking about my path, you know, there's a lot of things that I was really passionate about just learning in design. And, you know, I really designed a lot of things I was interested in just so that I could know I could finish it. You know, there's vehicles. I was like, I was a kid. I was like, I can't afford that. But, like, in a way, when I was designing it, I learned why they made decisions for that shape. And then over time, I took everything I learned, and then I started designing my own types of vehicles or my own robots and things like that. So, you know, just really just that created my own style and unique style, and just developing that and showing who you are through your portfolio is very important, because, you know, when we're looking at interns and, you know, future designers, you're really looking for that unique one that stands out. And, you know, and that's really what's awesome. You know, you learn from the past, learn why they, what rules they made or design languages they made, the balance, you know, form and function. But then you figure out how to find yourself and how to bring your own new twist to that. And, you know, just finding people like that is very, very important. And, you know, also with new technology and social media, LinkedIn, there's, you know, more opportunities for a new generation to find designers and directors and just communicate with them and figure out, okay, what, you know, I'm at this stage in my life, but you have any suggestions on, you know, which direction to walk in, because I'm serious about what I want to be. And that's a unique opportunity that, you know, kids have these days.
What does that design process kind of look like when you're working on, like, the Velocicoaster vehicle, for example? Like, how do you start and then end up with this massive industrial crazy thing?
Yeah, all right. So, you know, the Velocicoaster was really fun. It was like, the team was awesome. The team was like, it was a well put together team. Everyone just was into, you know, raising the bar. And, you know, there's coaster enthusiasts all on the team. We have hundreds and hundreds of different rides backed up, so we knew that we're like, okay, everybody, we're doing something brand new, raising the bar. You know, we're making it a rite of passage type ride. We knew that, like, hey, we need to go this direction. But what was awesome about this particular ride is we have this great IP, the universe. We have Jurassic World, so we could take these riskier elements with the thrill and really bring reasoning to that. And, you know, just coming up with these tenets of thrill, teeth, and environment were really important, because when we were looking at everything, that is the DNA of Jurassic. So we need these represented in the different decisions when we were designing things. And, you know, when we talked to the filmmakers, things made sense. And they were on board with us because, you know, we're introducing new things. Like, there's no roller coaster in the movie. And, you know, even the film, we realized that there was never a moment where the Raptors were on public display in an operational park. They were always loose. So it's like, all right, how would they be on public display? How would we show how they trained the Raptors and what it took to take care of them? And, you know, really elaborating on that with the filmmakers was really fun. And, you know, we wanted to make sure that when we introduce all these new elements to guests, it felt familiar, and that was a fun challenge to do.
It definitely.
I want to jump ahead a little bit and ask a question about my favorite part of the ride vehicle, which is the restraints.
Ooh.
I know, you know, there's a lot of things that go, you know, creating a ride that is both safe and accessible for a wide range of different body types, but also remains thrilling. And I gotta say, I've been on a lot of different coasters, and I've never experienced so much ejector air that wasn't painful. You know, I've been on things like Skyrush or Skyrush out at Hershey Park, where, you know, that similar kind of restraint was not a great experience. But how did you get it just right on VelociCoaster? What was the conversation about what kind of restraint system this would have, and you know, how did you fine-tune that to make what you have now?
Yeah, it was funny because, like, a small group of us really, really wanted that type of restraint on this ride. Even before we were working on VelociCoaster, we're like, the next one has to have, you know, this type of restraint. We have to. So that was already built in our heads. And so when we had the opportunity, we were like, okay, we really need to like convey to everyone how great this restraint is, even though it sounds scary on paper. And and you know, it's just what's amazing about it is comfortable. It is something that allows the ride, that helps the ride be more rewritable, and you're able to experience and view all this immersion that we designed around the attraction without any distraction. And you know, the airtime that had to be in there as part of the thrills, and it brings like a uniqueness to the attraction. You know, an incredible whole coaster. There's a lot of force pushing against the seat, and that's part of the whole personality of the ride. And we want to make sure that this ride was in its own lane and had its own uniqueness, and you know, we really wanted to lean into the ejector time as well for it.
I'm nervous and excited at the same time.
You have to do it.
I know.
Don't wear your glasses.
No, of course not. That's a contacts day, I think. How was it when you got to ride VelociCoaster for the first time, completely done? What was that experience like for you?
Oh, yeah. So at first, to be 100% honest, I was extremely nervous before we started because, you know, there were so many things. We were just, like, jamming so much into this ride, and then at one point we were like, there's nothing like this ride that we can compare it to. So we really had an idea of how it was going to be, but until we were strapping in about the test ride, we realized no one around here knows exactly how this is going to feel and what's going to happen. And so, but after the first go around, it was like, okay, alright, I just want to keep going over and over again. So we felt good, and we knew exactly what we were going to do next and the next steps, but it was a sigh of relief that, hey, this is rewritable. It's a crazy ride, but it's more fun than crazy, so it's a real fun ride.
Do you have that feeling of regret once you came over the top hat, like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done?
It's a feeling of freedom and the restraints. You just...
Oh, see, I would be like, I deeply regret this.
It's like, this is the best feeling ever.
I'll be scared through the queue, and then once I'm in it, I'll be like, all right, I can't get off of this now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great.
It's
so good.
Something I was wondering, this ride's construction has had such a life on social media, from the whole churro stand memes to the actual raptor perched on the track, someone created a YouTube POV rendering of it, like, you know, months before construction, that turned out to be fairly accurate. And on the team, are you guys, like, insulated from all of that kind of buzz, or do you guys pay attention to it? How does the, like, interaction with the fans affect you as you're creating a ride like this?
Oh, man, yeah, we see everything, honestly.
Okay.
The interaction with the fans is actually the best experience with actually creating this attraction. It was, you know, from day one, this was an attraction that, you know, we're we're doing for the fans. They're asking for something like this. So, you know, respecting the fans and delivering on what they're asking for, but bringing more to the table was the mission. And doing that and bringing more than they ever expected was really gratifying, because, you know, you can see, they see the construction, they're trying to predict what's going to happen, and then they think that's all there is, and they think it's done. They think, you know, this week the construction was over, and then later on they're like, there's more, and then there's more, and then it gets to the point they're like, there's more. And that really, like, was a lesson I'm always going to take in the future attractions, that, you know, just delivering more than what they expect is so important and is so appreciated.
That's a great way to think about it. Speaking of lessons, anything that you learned from working on Hagrid's that you might have taken into account with VelociCoaster?
Yeah, it was all on Hagrid's. So what I did on Hagrid's was I was responsible for the actual ride vehicle, because I was working on Incredible Hulk. I really art directed that, and Hagrid's main thing I worked on was the actual motorbike and the system that we're sitting in. So, you know, the importance of, you know, how unique and taking the ride vehicle serious is important as well, because, you know, that's what the guests are strapped in, you know, that's what they're touching, that's, you know, that's like a representation of who they are and what they're riding in. So just making sure that is taken serious and part of the story, and it enhances your experience. For instance, like at night, Hagrid's is just a different ride at night, with the lights going off in the ride vehicle and the lights shining, and just the same in VelociCoaster. So it's just like, just adding these elements that keeps enhancing the ride so that it's rewritable and you do it at different times and you experience great memories is really, really important.
Hagrid's is definitely a whole other beast at night. I have gotten to do that one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And VelociCoaster, too. You got to sort of get into line right at closing, because, you know, the sun doesn't really set until right around closing time. As long as you get in line right at closing and you get to ride right after sunset, there's nothing like it.
Yeah, there's nothing like it. It's an awesome memory. Amazing memory.
I don't know how much
just saying 10 minutes.
Oh, 10 minutes? Okay.
Oh, great.
So I imagine that a big part of the art direction challenge of VelociCoaster was blending the world of Jurassic World with the look of Jurassic Park. And just this, like yesterday, we got a new archway. That, you know, we lost that archway that was over where Kong is now. So we finally got it's not quite as big, but we finally got a second archway into
Jurassic Park. Always wanted to bring back the archway.
Yeah. I'm curious, like, what's that like, balancing those two very different aesthetics? And I mean, personally, I just got back a couple days ago from Hollywood, and the Jurassic World ride out there is amazing. So I would not personally complain if our river adventure turned into Jurassic World. But do you see the two franchises living side by side here for the foreseeable future?
Well, I mean, we wanted to celebrate the Jurassic franchise and do justice. So, you know, we definitely knew the aesthetic of Jurassic Park, and something unique about Orlando is how big the area is. And, you know, there's like fans that really love and appreciate all the thought that was placed into it. So we didn't want it to feel like we were taking away something that was already amazing. We wanted to feel like we're complimenting that. And wanting to feel like it was there the entire time. So there was a lot of thought in me from, you know, the art direction, the color of the paint, to, you know, just the design languages of connecting the dots. So it didn't feel jarring, it didn't feel lifeless. It felt like it was a blend of, you know, that environment and it, like things, there was life to it. So there was a lot of thinking into that, and we wanted to make sure that we added on top of this already amazing land. And it goes back to those tenets of what is the DNA of Jurassic, and, you know, whether it's Park World or you know, Camp Cretaceous, you know, what do all of those have in common that makes it feel like it's in that overall ecosystem? And for instance, even in the queue, we have those Easter eggs, we have those posters, right? And those are actually really popular right now. And, you know, we have the actual Teardown Flyers poster and Velocicoasters in the background and, you know, the Velocicoaster poster, and then we have the posters from the film. So, you know, we really wanted to kind of, like, story-wise, sneak ourselves into the canon and really, you know, make sense of that. And story-wise, Velocicoaster is actually taking place before the first Jurassic World movie. So, you know, story-wise, it is in this space where it can live between park and world and things like that. You know?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Let's see. What was the challenge of having to build a coaster with all of the goings-on of islands happening around it at the same time? Because that's got to be tough, right? Trying to build this massive thing while the park is still operational and the land that it's in is still operational to some degree?
Yeah, that is challenging. And we have a great project management office that was their biggest challenge, trying to figure out the real coordination of doing that and respectful to the guests, because we don't ever want to ruin any guest experience. We want every guest to have the same amazing experience when they're here. So, you know, even thinking about, hey, you know, we need to make sure there's dinosaurs on this fence, or when what can we do to kind of disguise this giant crane in the background? Everyone don't look over here, there's churros or something. And, yeah. that was a fun challenge that you know, turned into a phenomenon.
The churro stand will live forever.
Yeah. Absolutely. One of the things I love about Velocicoaster is there are so many cool Easter eggs, like you mentioned. And you are actually one of my favorite Easter eggs, because you appear in the pre-show video behind Chris Pratt. But I was wondering if there is maybe a favorite Easter egg that you helped sneak in there.
Oh, okay. You know, it's funny, it's probably one of the most simple Easter eggs, because it's literally an egg and it's on top of the that was one of the most, like it's weird, because that's the first thing that always pops in my head, because it was like one of the days when we were working on a rock work, and we're about to take a down off scaffolding, and it was going to be done, and you know, everyone was working hard in Florida sun, you know, the PPE on, everything, and we're just like, that'd be cool to put an egg up there, and everyone's like, yeah, we should do that. And then everyone just like all these different teams, the sculptors, the painters, everyone just came together and just like took a break and was like doing research and getting the eggs right. And then like within like a day and a half, we're just like, we had design built and hurricane proofed the egg and put it on top of the rock. And it was just a fun overall experience team wise on just getting that up there, and it's nice to tear it on fire, it's on there, and guests noticed it literally the next day. So that was pretty fun that, you know, we all worked together, took a break, had an idea together, and then it was immediately appreciated. But, you know, throughout the queue, there's so many awesome Easter eggs, just like the water cup next to the Raptor windows, and that, you know, that is the iconic water cup that, like, the water kind of shakes every time there's a footstep. And, you know, there's just so many cool things. There's the miniature ride vehicle, and, you know, we're hinting at, you know, when the Raptors were younger, they used the RC to train the Raptors, and now they're big, so they got a big one. So, you know, there's a lot of fun stuff throughout the ride.
I'm so glad there's a fun story behind that egg, because that egg for me is like the equivalent of the goat trick out at Big Thunder Mountain in Disneyland. There's this famous goat where if you keep your eye on it as you go around the turn, you get kind of an extra whiplash. And the egg's the same way. As you come at that launch and you come over that first inversion, if you try to focus your eyes on that egg, it makes the G-forces feel even more intense coming
oh
through.
Gosh.
So yeah, look for that egg if you really want to give the ride a little more bite.
I'll use that.
I'll save that for my second ride through.
Yeah, for sure.
So cool.
So now that...
All right, we got time for like one or two more questions.
Just say one more.
One more question.
Okay. So Velocicoaster is open and guests are riding it like Seth 50, 60 something times over and over again. What's next for you on the pipeline?
Oh man. Well, you know, we're just finishing up Velocicoaster right now. So I don't know. I might take a vacation to,
yes,
to Costa Rica or something. I'll figure that out. You know, I'm just really excited about finishing this ride, and you know, whenever I get back from hanging out with Steven Spielberg, I'll jump on this ride.
No big deal.
Real quick, what's your favorite seat? Shelby picked third row left. What do you like best?
Mine's back row left at night.
Ooh.
This was so great.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right, no, yeah. It was fun. Thank you.
Thanks for so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Let's have a quick word from our sponsor.
Here at Destinations with Character Travel, we offer the best experience with your travels. Need to visit the thrilling Disneyland Resort? Walt Disney World? Maybe lounge about on a Disney cruise? Or any other major cruise line? No problem. So if you're looking for a stress and hassle-free vacation, visit us at www.destinationswithcharacter.com. Contact us today and let us plan a magical vacation for you and your family.
It's time for the main attraction!
All right, and for this week's main attraction, something I was surprised by. I wasn't expecting this. Disney has officially put out the statement that all non-union salaried employees in the U.S. are required to be vaccinated for COVID-19.
And that also includes hourly employees. It pretty much covers anyone who isn't in the union, and they are in discussions with the union over this. But this is a big step, especially for Central Florida. They're like the biggest single-site employer in the U.S. and the major employer in Central Florida. So this could really move the needle on our vaccination rates here in the Orlando area.
Yeah, this is huge. Currently, for those who are at work, back to work and are not vaccinated, they will have 60 days to comply with the new rules, so they will have to find whether it be the 2-dose or the 1-dose vaccine to get vaccinated. And then once Disney has come to an agreement with the unions, they will likely disseminate that information amongst union leaders. But this is a big deal.
Yeah. They're also, if you are trying to get hired there, you're not going to be able to start until you have become fully vaccinated. There are going to be exceptions, exemptions for medical reasons or religious reasons. We don't have all of those specific details, you know, for the most part, the goal is to get their entire workforce immunized.
Yeah, this is, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I haven't really seen other corporations.
I believe I saw something about Walmart, maybe,
okay.
And a couple other big corporations, but you know, I think that's what's ultimately, you know, I don't think the government, you know, the federal government mandating vaccines is going to happen. But the closest thing that we have is, you know, these mega corporations that if enough of them get together and say, you know, this is what we demand of our employees, then that's certainly going to push some of the people who were, you know, maybe it's not going to push the people who are really anti-vaccination. Maybe they'll find other jobs. But the people who are just hesitant or kind of on the fence, hopefully this will push a lot of them to go ahead and get it done.
I think the only thing that would make this even more enticing would be if they facilitated vaccinations, like at the Epcot Health Center.
That makes sense to, you know, not just mandate that your employees do this, but this should be something that you get, you know, paid hours off to do, and that they do on site, and, you know, they make that part of your work day and not, you know, make you work your 8-hour shift and then go figure out where you're going to go off site to try to get this done. Disney certainly has the operational skills and resources to do that. So, you know, hopefully they might have a program for that already right now. I know they did have testing programs on site earlier. So I would not be surprised if that's part of it.
And also maybe recovery time.
Yeah.
Because at least absolutely. Like, for me personally,
I need after my second one, I needed a day.
Yeah. I got the Johnson & Johnson one, so mine was just the one dose. But like 3 hours after I got it, I was feeling like straight garbage.
Yeah.
You couldn't get me to do anything besides lay on the couch and feel sorry for myself. So I think that's definitely necessary too, whether or not Disney would actually do that.
I'm curious to see if Universal follows them.
Yeah, and then SeaWorld Parks and Resorts, so that would cover SeaWorld and Busch Gardens, and do you feel safer? I mean, not implying that you feel unsafe.
I don't know if I feel safe anywhere doing anything anymore.
That's
There is no such thing as safe anymore. I think that we as a society will just be safer once we get, you know, herd immunity, whatever, above 80% of the whole population. You know, there's always going to be some holdouts, but we could be a lot further along than we are right now. And the Delta variant would not be filling up the hospitals. You know, right now, I know Advent Health, which is the hospital closest to me, is at black condition, which isn't something that they had. And other hospitals, you know, they're running out of ICU beds. Here in Florida, the numbers have basically higher than at any other point in the pandemic, including when we all, you know, decide to stay indoors for 2 weeks. So it's really serious here. And, you know, if our state government is not taking it seriously, then at least our big employers seem to be.
Yeah. And I know it can be kind of divisive as far as like feeling like you're being forced to do it. But I don't.
I mean, we're forced to do it. I'm not allowed to go walk into a restaurant with bare feet and, you know, without wearing my underwear. I mean, there's all sorts of things that infringe on my freedom because, you know, they're just basic health and safety. You know, I might want the freedom to go and pee at the pool at the hotel, but that's not safe. And I don't know. If you look at the numbers of people who have had adverse reactions to the vaccine, it's one of the safest things you could put in your body. Like you probably have about as much chance of getting hurt from taking an aspirin, just statistically speaking. And so it's, you know, don't do it for you. Do it for all the people who can't get the vaccine for whatever reason.
They're kids.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, until we have this approved for the under 12 crowd, especially when we're talking about theme parks, you're surrounded by people who can't yet be vaccinated. So, you know, at least do your part to not be the one spreading it.
Yeah. Think about the kids.
And if we lose any listeners because of that apparently deeply controversial political statement, I'm very sorry. But I want people to come back alive from their vacations so they can go back and have more vacations in the future.
Yes.
And I think that's what Disney wants too, because you don't really want to kill your audience.
No. Rodney said great points.
Thank you, Rodney.
Especially that last one. That last one was very much the...
Yes. We don't want to kill our audience either.
No, we don't, which is why...
We love you.
We love you. And this is where we would thank you for being here if you were part of the Attractions Magazine subscription group, but we don't have any new subscribers this week.
So sad. Call up your friends and family and be like, have you joined yet? Like, do it. Come on.
If you are interested, there are 4 tiers you can pick from, and if you choose the club or VIP tiers, the week after you subscribe, you get a shout out from us telling you how great you are and how grateful we are that you decided to support the podcast and the magazine.
We could be saying your name with great enthusiasm right now, so get on it.
Yes. And we also have our summer issue, which Seth mentioned earlier with his interview in there. If you are interested, go to attractionsmagazine.com/store and pick it up.
And at this point, I would wait for you to thank our sponsor once more.
Oh, yes. Sorry. See,
we're going to get this segue clean one of these shows. Every week we get to this point and there's this awkward silence like, do I go? Do you go? Do you go?
Okay. Thank you, Destinations of Character Travel. We are eternally grateful that you support us. And this is now where Seth will go into his segue.
That was so smooth. I just want to remind everyone, please, to help us get out the word about this podcast by going over to Apple Podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating, not 3, not 2, not 1, and definitely not 7.5, because you can't do that. Just a 5-star rating. That's all we ask. And if you really like us, please leave us a positive review, because that helps get the word out about Attractions Magazine and all the good work that we do.
Yes. Now, Seth, if you would, tell the folks at home where they can find you on the interwebs.
Well, you can find me and my books at theunofficialguides.com or at the UG Series on Twitter or at The Unofficial Guides on Instagram. And Brittany, why don't you tell the good folks the same about you?
You can find me at Brittany Tuttle. That's BRITTANITUTTLE. Yes, it's both funny on Twitter and Instagram, but also every day at attractionsmagazine.com, at attractions on Twitter, at attractionsmagazine on Instagram, and youtube.com/attractionsmagazine, where you've been hanging out with us for the past 43 minutes or so.
But it might be longer if you listen to the interview.
Yeah, so keep an eye out for that audio version, please. I work really hard on it every week. And until next week, I hope you guys stay safe, try something new, but most importantly, have fun. And we will see you next time.
Bye.